Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast.
Thank you for checking out another edition of Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin, and it's stage number two of nine-time track champion at Beech Ridge Motor Speedway in 2017, Maine Motorsport Hall of Fame member Mike Maietta. And I promise there's more racing in this one. Although, judging by feedback from last week, if we just continued what we did last week in this episode, I think a lot of people would be, well, highly entertained, that's for sure. But we did receive a few messages of like, hey, we're going to talk about the Richie Evans. Yes, there's a lot of that in this episode, how Mike and Richie met, the time that Mike, I mean, even though Mike was driving a Richie Evans car, one that came from his shop, and I think casual fans like myself always wondered whether it was a tribute car or if it was a legit Evans car. So we'll get into that. Plus, the time that Mike could have driven the Rapid Romans legit 61, but he passed it up. Why did he pass it up? Those stories and more in stage number two. Quick shout to... Oh, by the way, this week, I completely forgot about this. I meant to talk about it a little bit more in the previous weeks, but the past is the past, and, well, here we are. So this Sunday, LST Motorsport Park, which is over in Richmond, Maine, it's their season finale. And while it won't be an Open Trailer Podcast event, I'll be there jumping on the mic and getting back to my go-kart roots and calling some races. And it's going to be a trip because a lot of the kids, I say kids, but when I started, they were racing go-karts legit, and now their children are. So that'll be neat. So come on out Sunday. MainlyKarting.com for all the information. Of course, you can check them out on social media. Gates open at 9:30 a.m. Practice starts at 10:30. It's a great way to support the future of short track racing. On Open Trailer Podcast, we spent a ton of time talking about the past and the founders who built what we enjoy today. But this is another way to give back to what we all enjoy. So LST Motorsport Park this Sunday. Come on out. I'll be on the mic, and we'll just be having a fun time. And I'd love to meet some of you in person, and a lot of new people coming on board and communicating. And speaking of coming on board, if you're just learning about this podcast, we have a couple of other seasons. You can scroll back through the episodes and listen to those. You can also contribute to Patreon.com. Patreon.com/OpenTrailerPodcast. $5 a month. Gets you an early drop. It supports this podcast, keeps it going, pays for the streaming and all the little things associated with putting this on. If you can't do that, no problem. You still enjoy the show. That's so greatly appreciated. Hitting the share button, screenshotting that you've listened to it, telling a friend in person, suggesting it, all that helps immensely, so thank you for that. Another note, end of this month, Maine Vintage Race Car Association having their annual Hall of Fame. Another great class inducted. This will be at the Augusta Civic Center. I urge you to check out this event. It's just one of the funnest nights to really sit back. I mean, if you enjoy this podcast for the racing stories, oh, go check it out in person. MaineVintageRace.org for complete details on the upcoming Maine Motorsport Hall of Fame. And, of course, be a member of Maine Vintage Race Car Association at MaineVintage.org. MaineVintageRace.org, excuse me. They have all the information there. This one's cool. Not surprised. Mike Maietta brings it. Stage number two of Open Trailer Podcast. Enjoy.
You know what I mean? It was so stupid. And that's kind of like when I learned to ignore them people. You got to ignore them, because if you go out there every week pissed off at somebody, you ain't going to drive your best. You just ain't. You're going to be concentrating more on getting that guy, which you probably never will get him. because they're going to outfox you. And once I learned that, I never had a problem with nobody.
How did you separate being angry on the racetrack in the moment from just what you had just said as far as letting it go?
I don't know how I ever did it because I am quick-tempered. So I don't know how I ever did it, but I just, like, even on the road, I was road rage, cuckoo clock. If someone did something to me, I'd get out of that car, I'd go after them. You know, today you get shot. You would. But out there, I don't know if it was Roman or Richie, or they said you can't do that. And I learned that kind of in the police department. If someone made you ugly on the police department, you can't go gunning for them every night because you ain't going to do your job because all you got on your mind is getting this person who you might never see again.
Yeah.
But you're looking for them, you know.
Right.
So
it's in your head.
Yeah, I don't know what made me. I mean, sometimes I'd be mad, you know, and Roman would say, listen, we're here to race, which we were. And I just let it go. I kind of had to, because Steve didn't want that type of atmosphere, which, now that you think about it, nobody wanted that, you know?
I think, you know, one of the more iconic cars you had in the beginning was that orange and white number 13. But that isn't the color that you stuck with. You guys had the yellow car with the same fonts. You had a red car. You had different colors when you were with Dickie.
I don't remember why. Obviously, the Cale Yarbrough colors, because I liked Cale Yarbrough when I was younger.
Is that why you originally were?
And that's
the
why
orange?
The paint scheme was the way it was. And I think a lot of people copied Cup cars. You know what I mean?
Still do.
Yeah. Right. So I painted mine the color of
Cale Yarbrough.
Painted Georgie's the color of Jeff Bodine's, because we knew Jeff Bodine not real well, not nowhere near as well as we knew Richie.
Geez, that's kind of a ballsy move because everybody hated Jeff Bodine at that time.
Yeah, but he was good.
Yeah. Oh, he's a good driver.
He really was. Was good, yeah.
No, I'm just saying based on what happened at the 250 that year.
Yeah.
He wasn't a popular guy, but you had that yellow car in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I just put that together. That
was why for that. And we just kind of, I don't have no imagination. I can't, like, lay out a house plan. I got a brother that can do that in his sleep. Mm. You know what I mean? And it always comes out beautiful. I'm not like that. I can't do that. I don't get no imagination. So we kind of copied stuff as we went, you know. Yeah.
Why weren't you a 28 then?
Why wasn't I?
Cale Yarbrough's number.
Oh, my mother liked the number 13.
Really?
Yeah. It's supposed to be a bad luck number, but it was good luck for me, you know.
Very much so.
I think just in racing, but.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you stuck with 13 pretty much your entire career.
Yeah.
You know, you also get into the mid-80s were when those V6s really started to come around. And it was also when touring racing for asphalt stock cars were starting to blossom with American Canadian Tour and Bush North. And you guys get into that, too.
Now, a little bit, yeah.
I think what happens is people forget that, you know, because and even myself, I assumed you started racing in the 70s, and this was a logical progression.
Right.
But by the time 86, 87 has come around, you've only been racing 5 years, and you're already buying tour cars, which, different era, that just didn't happen to some people. How'd you get your first tour car?
I think the first one I bought was off Dick Lines, and it was Robbie Crouch's car. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better car, a better going car, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Robbie was very successful in it. I wasn't as successful in it because I only raced them once a month.
Mm. And why was that?
Just because we concentrated on the beach. I think when you go out and race, you get which winning championships at Beach Ridge was tough, was really tough. But I'm going to tell you something. Back in the NASCAR North days, and the early ACT days, those were tough, tough, tough divisions. Those were tough. Mm-hmm. You had Beaver Dragon, Bobby Dragon, Robbie Crouch, Ralph Nason, Junior Hanley. I mean, it would take me a month to sit down and remember every driver that I raced with. Joey the Kid Carafas. So, I mean, they were such, Dave Dion. They were such classy, race car drivers. And you know, when a guy from up north takes out a guy from down south, because the people went crazy, right? They, like you said, they didn't like Bodine anyway. and McCabe takes him out, it was real. I mean, it was real, you know. It was nobody took too much crap.
Right.
And they was all fantastic race car drivers. Kevin LePage. I can go on. Jamie Obey. I mean, Chuck Bown. Every week, those guys were showing up. What are my chances? I mean, I could have said, I'm going to go the tour racing, but I couldn't afford it, to be quite honest, to go full time. So we concentrated on what we could afford, and that was the Beech Ridge Championships.
With an extra tour car
right.
that you didn't mess
Every
with.
Every time I raced an open race, it was with another car. Mm-hmm. Something that we'd probably only work on two nights a month.
But that was deliberate.
Yes, yes.
And why was that deliberate?
Just because we were concentrating. All our concentration was on winning championships. Mm-hmm. That's tough to win them championships, even at Beech Ridge.
How much of...
I saw other drivers go out and try it, like Randall. Like, you just...
Zemla.
Yeah. You got to have the money to do it and do it right. You know, I didn't have the money. You know, everybody thought I did, but I didn't.
Did you learn from their, I wouldn't say mistakes, because everything's just an experience, but from their experiences on the NASCAR North Tour?
Yeah, I watch these guys who I know are as good, if not better, race car drivers than me. They go out to a full-time team that's all they do is work on their car, and they couldn't do it. So I knew I wasn't going to be able to, you know what I mean? Not to mention the commitment, the traveling. I couldn't be away from the business that long, right. You know, to go to Canada or whatever, you know what I mean? And it's hard to get a crew. Back then it wasn't. Today it would be impossible to get somebody to go with you to Canada and race like they did every other weekend. Yeah. It never interested me. I knew the competition was so tough. I probably didn't stand a chance. And we just went on the Saturday night stuff.
But they did race a lot of open shows at Beech Ridge under the ACT banner. One under, well, it was always ACT because it was 86, but it was a steel body car. But you were always up front with one. What was it like to race around those guys on your home turf?
It was indescribable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so much fun, you know. They respected me. I respected them, obviously. But I got along with all them guys, too. I didn't cause anybody any problems, you know. Mm. I didn't run somebody off the track to, I don't know. How do you come up with a reason for running someone off the track just because you want to beat them? To me, that ain't racing. Yeah. I got to pass somebody. I have more. And if I'm holding somebody up, I get out of the way, I wave them by. You know what I mean?
Is it frustrating to watch? I mean, do you watch a lot of racing today?
Yeah.
Yeah, quite I see
not
you
as track. Much as I used to, but yeah.
But I see you at the racetrack. Yeah, that was kind of a stupid question. What do you? Because I think you mentor Brandon Barker.
I like Brandon. Yeah,
yeah.
He was a hard kid to get to know. And that's another thing with this generation. These kids, they don't talk. They don't. You know what I mean? They're shy. I don't know what it is. I mean. Garrett Hall, one of the best race car drivers you watch in this era. He's not a talker, you know what I mean? You try to talk to him, carry on a conversation, you can't. Brandon Barker, same way. They said, well, when you get to know him a little better, he loosens up, which he did, but still nothing like it was in my day.
I think there's a difference there, and that's a credit to the, you know, the weight that you carry when you walk into any conversation. You're Mike Maietta. So to someone like myself or someone like Brandon or Garrett Hall, they grow up and the looming name is there. You're like, oh my God, it's that guy. I got to really, you know, mind my P's and Q's. Whereas when you even started this podcast saying, I'm not really a talker. I don't like to talk. You know, it's kind of the same thing. You're a little bit out of your element.
Right.
So those guys.
Oh, really out of it.
Yeah. You're doing a great job. Those guys are a little out of their element talking to you because it's in their way intimidating, even though that isn't your intention.
No, but I've seen it even with other people. I've watched their interviews. I ain't even in the same state. It's just, I don't think anybody talks like we used to because of social media. Everything's done on social media today. Mm-hmm. That's how they talk to one another, you know? Now you can't even order food. You can't go into a store and order food. You got to do it on an iPad or something.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just the way the world's going. Mm. you know? And I don't necessarily think that's the right way, but,
right.
You know, I'm used to, I used to go in and go into schools with Andy, and we used to go in and the kids that was interested in racing, which there was a lot of them then, a lot of them little kids came to the racetrack. That was so much fun, right? And they used to ask me to go and speak in front of a class. These kids want to grow up and maybe race, like when they were starting the go-kart racing and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was fun. Yeah. I didn't like it, but it was fun. You know what I mean? It wound up being fun, and I was glad I went.
That's why this podcast is in person. I mean, I could easily just Zoom it.
Right.
And have someone on a screen be like, okay, and tell the same story.
Yeah.
I think I'd get a much different story from you across this kitchen table than we would if we were on a computer.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
So I'm all about community.
Yeah.
But
I don't think that goes on anymore in society. I don't. You know better than me because you're younger than me.
Right.
I mean, I got a kid down solo that's Kathy's grandson. He's 12 years old. I love him to death. He calls me grandpa, but I can't understand him. He speaks a different language, and he's 100% American. I can't understand it.
Right.
I mean, they have they call things, I can't even tell you an example. I wish he was here, but they call things that we used to call something totally different.
Yeah, well, it's just life.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I didn't keep up with the times, I guess.
You don't need to. You don't need to.
I liked it the way it was.
When it comes to racing, though, racing is completely different than it was when you were to the point where, like, okay, if it's not my day, I'm getting out of the way.
Right.
Is it frustrating to have been the driver in the era that you were to see all of that, the way that racing is today?
I watch races on that computer, which I'm death against, but I do it now. I started doing it. And I watch a few races and I see people, the stuff they pull. Let's put it this way. I think if I was able to watch races on the computer like you can today, I would have learned a lot more watching them races than I would if I went to the races. You know what I mean? I see what these guys do and you know, I know exactly what they did.
Yeah,
and I know exactly why they did it, but it's weird, you know. I said, I wish these was around. I could see, like, where Bob Randall was weak. I could see that every week, like the Cup guys do, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what they say they do, and you can tell, you know. And like I watched that White Mountain racing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were some dirty tricks pulled there. You know what I mean? And I understand why, and they're under a lot of pressure.
What's the dirtiest thing anybody did to you on a racetrack?
You know, I never had a lot of problems. I didn't put myself in them situations, for one thing.
I don't remember you having many wrecked race cars.
No, I didn't. No, I was very fortunate. I drove through more accidents. I'm telling you, I don't know how I got through them myself half the time, and that's the truth. I don't remember really, and nothing stands out that I consider a bad thing. I really can't answer that. And I've had a lot of stuff happen, you know what I mean? But, you know, I've been in quite a few wrecks, but I've been lucky. I don't know. I can't answer that.
One wreck that sticks out is one that didn't happen in the full-bodied race car, in the modified. But before we talk about that, you've been a number 13 for the majority of your career. But when you were open wheel, you were number 16
right.
with very much a Richie Evans-type race car. Can you tell me a little history on that?
That was a Richie Evans race car. Richie Evans, I get his last trophy. His wife, Lynn, gave me... The last trophy he won before he got killed was at Oxford. I have that. She gave it to me after he got killed.
It's in this house?
Yes.
Wow.
And we went to the funeral and everything, you know, and we used to go visit the cemetery. But remember when he raced the Grey Ghost? Remember he had a primer colored car? They called it the Grey Ghost. And it was unbelievable.
I remember the Grey Ghost in Cup. That was Buddy Baker.
But no, this was him in the modifieds.
Yeah. And there are people screaming at the phone right now going, yes, I know that car, you loser.
And you couldn't beat him. I mean, he was unbelievable in that car.
It was just a primered Pinto body? Or?
It was built for somebody who didn't pick it up. So he started racing it, primer color, with 61 on it. And you couldn't beat him. Mm. I mean, it was unbelievable. I went to Stafford one weekend, and he said, Mike, I'd like you to drive this. He always brought two cars to Stafford. One was the one that he used to race, and then the Grey Ghost. And he almost fought with me to get me to try it, and I didn't dare to.
Why didn't you want to?
Because if I crashed it, I didn't have the money to fix it. He said, who asked you to? I mean, he did everything but stuff me in it and tell me to drive it. Mm. Today, I wish I would have done it. Back then, I was conservative, I guess. I was nervous. I didn't want to make myself look foolish. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I'd never...
Had you never raced a modified before?
No. And then after he got killed, that's the year he got killed, or the following year. And Billy... Because Richie always wanted me to have one of his cars. Billy built me one, brand new. Billy Nazwick was his crew chief at the time. And we knew all them guys because we went to races all the time. So he built me one, painted it the same orange as Richie's was.
So that's the same paint that came out of that stable. That wasn't a copy.
It was built in Rome, New York. Yeah.
Wow.
And he had his stencils up on the wall, the 61 stencils. It was a 1 and a 6. They used them numbers. They lettered it and everything for me down there. When I picked it up, it was all ready to go.
So that wasn't a tribute car. That's straight from the shop.
Right from brand spanking new, right from the shop. Just like if Richie would have built it.
Hmm.
And it was all lettered. It was 100% complete. And Eastern Tractor was the reason why I was able to do that.
How did you and Richie meet?
Through Georgie Libby, believe it or not.
doesn't surprise me.
No, we was down to Stafford. We used to go there all the time and watch the modifies. That's kind of what we followed back then.
Mm-hmm.
And after the races, they'd all go. They had a clubhouse down there and a rollerdrome and stuff. And we was upstairs at the rollerdrome, and Richie was up there, and Georgie was over there because we was all... half in the bag, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So Georgie went over, started talking to Richie, and just was, Richie called him a persistent blank, mm-hmm. you know, and Georgie could be, you know what I mean? But it was all in fun. It was in great fun. And then Richie got to know all of us. It was on the bus. Then he come out on the bus, you know what I mean? Because he was half lit. And we just from there on, it was great.
Yeah.
I used to have a friend of his from Rome, New York, used to come here and stay at my house every summer. He'd come up for a couple of weeks, you know, the old guy. I think he's still alive, but I don't know. He had an orange 72 or 3, the square type. Richie's orange pickup, Chevy pickup, shot bed. It was pretty sharp. Wilbur was the guy's name.
Were you at Oxford for his last win?
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, did you celebrate with him? Or were you in the pits?
Oh, yeah, we used to, you know, me and Brian Ross, we'd be in the back of, I don't know whose hauler, mine or his, it don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be back there arm wrestling. You know, we always raised hell. I mean, it was so much fun. It was just, but everybody was, we socialized, you know what I mean? We didn't have a computer or a phone to be able to say what we wanted to say. We had to say it to each other.
and it was
just, I can remember being in the back that year he won the race, Richie, me and Brian in the back arm wrestling for a couple hours, you know what I mean?
Jeez, that's a long time.
We just had fun, wrestled. You know, we just had a good time, you know.
What's your best Richie Evans story?
We went to Syracuse Fair, Syracuse, New York. He wanted us to come down. So, yeah, we said, yeah, okay, we'll go. So he goes, you park right next to my motorhome,
mm-hmm.
and I'll meet you guys there whatever night, say Thursday night or Friday night, I don't remember. So we got there, and we parked next to his motorhome. He wasn't there. So I call him up. I said, hey, we're here. Where are you? Oh, Jesus, he didn't think we'd come, right?
Right.
So He goes, I'll be up.
So Rome to Syracuse.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he comes up with his ambulance. I think he had a 70s Pontiac Catalina or something for an ambulance. It was all painted orange. His color's orange and stuff. So he comes up, and he wasn't racing at Syracuse. It was a dirt track, a one-mile dirt track. And like Sammy Sessions, Barefoot Bob McCready, all them guys, you know, the top World of Outlaws were there. And we stood up on top of Richie's camper because he had it rigged up so you could. And we watched it. And that was amazing to me. I couldn't believe that. And then Richie took us fishing, salmon fishing. And I had somewhere between Oswego and Syracuse. Mm. He took us salmon fishing. I never saw anything like it in my life. Hundreds of people in the river with hips on. Mm-hmm. And them fish jumping right out of the water. It's like something you'd see on television.
Wow.
And he took us there. And it was just unreal to watch. Then we went from Syracuse. He had to race at Oswego. So we all went to Oswego. He went there and won. But that fishing trip has to be one of the top. And then I was always kind of, like I said, I was the clown every place I went. So we was playing cards on the bus. So make a long story short, I had probably $200 or $300, which was a lot back then. Mm-hmm. Well, I lost every dime. Richie cleaned me out playing cards.
Yeah.
Cleaned
you out.
I mean out.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, he gave me the money back.
Wow.
But I was drinking. He knew why he was taking advantage of me because I wasn't too sharp when I drank. And he gave me all my money back.
Jesus, right.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I had a horrible weekend, but.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it was back then. Everybody, you know, it was just so nice.
You know, your championships start to stack up. In 1990, you do something that hadn't happened in a long time. I mean, you're right up there with Dick Wollstonecroft as far as, you know, winning multiple track championships in the same year. How were you able to run both divisions?
It was tough. It was tough. And I was not as big as I am now, but I was fairly big to be getting in a modified. But I can't. It was tough, but it was fun. I'd get out of the late model, run over to my modified. They'd be out there heating their tires up, and I'm still getting strapped in my car. Mm. But they always gave me a couple laps to get the tires head up, and it was very hectic.
Did you have two different crews?
Yeah. That Kevin Colburn was the one that was the crew chief on the modified when I won that. Mm. And Steve Roman was the crew chief on the late model. So, yeah, it was hectic. It was a lot easier getting out of the modified and into the pro stock to get going. And I always had to start at the tail end anyways because I was usually up in the points. Mm. So it was tough.
Were you worn out on Sunday?
No. No, that never bothered me. I'd come in from a race, I wouldn't even be sweating.
Really?
A lot of times. Yeah. You know?
Well, you're in the construction industry, so.
No, it was just, I don't know, I think I was lucky, you know what I mean? I'd see some people come in right soaked. I'd come in and I was hot, but I mean, I wasn't really sweating.
Do you ever do any modified tour racing?
No, I never did, no.
Yeah.
Well, because I didn't get my modified till after my best modified friend was dead, you know, so I had that chance at Stafford. I wish now I would have taken it. I was at Flemington with Billy Osman, who was the Richie Evans of the dirt modifieds. And we used to go to Flemington all the time, and we used to go stay at Billy Osman's house, and I had a chance to drive one of them. And it didn't take me no time to say no to that. But I wish I'd have done it now. But at the time, I didn't. When we went away on them trips, it was my time to relax. It wasn't all business like it was when we went to White Mountain, went to Seekonk. You know, I had to be kind of on the ball. When we went to the races, I wanted to relax. That was part of the reason we went. But I did have an opportunity to drive one of them dirt modifieds. I wish I did, but I'm not sorry I didn't, but I wish I would have tried it, you know?
Did Richie, and it sounds like you guys clowned around, you were good
friends.
Well,
Richie and Billy Osmond were great friends.
Yeah.
So that's how we met Billy.
What's the best advice that Richie Evans gave you? Like serious driving advice, not just goofing around.
It was at Oxford. And like I was out there racing, right? Well, when I used to race when I first started, I'd have a, honest to God, I'd have a death grip on the steering wheel.
That makes sense.
I mean, I was so, in cuss, when you do that, you're jerking the steering wheel because you're so tense, you're so key. So I always did that. And sometimes I'd come in the pits, I couldn't get my hands to come off the steering wheel. They'd cramp up. Richie came to Oxford, and he was, I didn't even know this, but he was on the fence watching me race. And he said, and when I come in, he goes, how come you got a death grip on the wheel?
He could see that.
Yeah, he could see that. Yeah. And he could, because I'm sure he could see the car darting, you know. And I said, I don't know. I said, I just, that's, I've always done it. He goes, well, you got to stop that because you're never going to be successful doing that. He goes, that steering wheel's in there for three reasons. Turn left, turn right, and rest your hands on it. That's all that thing's in there for. After he did that, it took me a while. I had to really concentrate. I had to say, geez, my hands are loose. I'm still, I don't know. I'm the type of guy that if I hit the wall, you know, it'll spin the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I was, I think, strong enough back then that I'd grip that steering wheel so tight that it would have broke the steering shaft before it broke my wrist.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
That's a death grip. Yeah.
Yes. And once he told me, I thought he was being kind of a
wise ass,
a wise guy, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I started to get ugly, you know, not ugly, but I started to say, you know, where'd this come from? You know, why are we even having this conversation? But once I started doing what he told me to do,
yeah.
My career, it seemed like from that day on, my career took off.
Yeah.
And I don't think it ever would have if I'd have kept doing it the way I was doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, and you learn driving on the clay and dirt, it's a slippery surface.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you know, you dug up the racetrack, just to get back to that a little bit. Where is that dirt? Where is that clay that you dug up in 85? Where'd you guys put it?
Across the street.
Oh.
So if anybody wants to open up a dirt track,
yeah,
I know where they can get a good start.
A ton of dirt, yeah. Ton of oil and everything in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1990 is also the year that you have, you know, you have a pretty serious incident. But it didn't happen at Beech Ridge. Can you tell me about that crash?
Oh, up to Oxford, yeah. So we was in a heat, and back then, up there, there was, like 20-something cars in a heat. And me and Mike Johnson was in the back because I couldn't draw. I started in the back almost every time I mm-hmm. raced up there. But Billy Penfold was on the front row, and I knew it was going to be a horror show. But
because of Penfold?
Yeah, just because he's come a long way since then.
But at that time,
but
he
back
has a reputation.
Then, yeah, okay. He had a reputation of being kind of rough around the edges. And he got spun going in the first turn. Coming out of two, he got spun right in the middle. So everybody's trying to take evasion moves, and I didn't want to put Mike Johnson down over the sandbank, so I'm trying to give him enough room so he can stay up on the track. And Penfold was looping around like he did, and the whole back of his car broke off when the guy hit him. Mm-hmm. Well, he came back up and came into my door. Well, when he did, a pipe came right through the door, through the roll cage, into my seat, and it went right through my arm. And I didn't know what happened. It wasn't a hard hit. It was just, you could hit me harder with your fists than that car hit me. So I kind of spun me around sideways. I just locked the brakes up because I had a lot of pain, but I didn't know what from. I didn't know what it was. So Roman called me on the radio. He said, are you all right? And I said, no, something happened, but I'm not sure what happened. I said, my arm hurts. So I can't remember the cameraman. He was another one that was he was a real good for the sport.
Dan Wolf?
Yeah. No, not Dan Wolf.
Dan Walker?
Yeah. No, I don't remember. But he was a camera guy up there anyways. So he saw the blood coming out my door where the jack
Dan Iott? No.
Jeez, I can't remember.
He was, we're going to be here.
I thought it was Dan something, but he was a nice guy. I just, I'm terrible with names, always have been. Mm-hmm. But so he saw the blood running out the door. So he comes up to me and he goes, "You all right?" And I said, "No." Well, the track thought I was trying to sit there and get a yellow.
Yeah.
Because people do that.
Yeah, well, they still do. Yeah.
So I sit there and here comes that whole field wide open. I said, "Boy, this is really going to suck, you know, if they hit me with all this pain I got going on."
So they didn't throw the caution?
Nope, because they thought I was sitting there waiting for a yellow. Hmm. So then when the camera guy come, they threw the yellow, camera guy comes running up. Then I guess he started waving for the ambulance.
You didn't get hit.
Huh?
You didn't get hit by that field.
No, okay. They split me. But boy, I'll tell you, I was sitting right there, door side to him, waiting. I thought it was going to happen, but that's why, you know, we had this radio problem. Beach Ridge wouldn't allow us to have radios, you know. And I wasn't a big fan of radios. I didn't need one. I kind of took care of myself and did it, you know. I didn't really rely on a spotter or anything, you know. I kind of did it all on my own. But those radios have saved a lot of race cars. Beach Ridge outlawed them. They wouldn't let you have radios because, and I'm sure it don't happen like it used to back then, but they were blocking. You know what I mean? Because they were telling them to do this on the radio. You're the race car driver. You do what's right. You know what I mean? You can't have somebody telling you, you know, go to the outside, block him, he's coming. And they used to do it.
Yeah.
So Beach Ridge said, we're not going to have the radios no more.
Well, this happens right around the same time that, you know, we had lost Richie. We had lost Charlie Jazan back.
Yeah.
You know, we had lost, you know, some other Corky Cookman.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of
drivers. I remember when Corky Cookman wound up right in the bleachers at Stafford upside down. Mm. I'll never forget it. We were sitting there, you know, just up from where it happened.
Can you tell that story?
It's not really nothing to tell. I mean, we was there for, it was like, I can't remember what race, but it was one we went to every year.
It was a Sizzler, I think.
Was it? Yeah.
It might have been.
Yeah, and we were sitting there because we sat all different places to, because it was fun to view it from a different angle and stuff, so... he flipped and come right up in the grandstands. We were sitting right there. I've seen a lot of people killed at races, and I don't like that. I can remember being at Thompson when the Super Modifieds were there, and the Modifieds, or somebody was racing on the track, the Super Modifieds were pit on the infield. Guy lost his tire. That tire come bouncing across the infield and killed a guy that was sitting on one of the super modified tires, just sitting there minding his own business.
Enjoying life.
You know, I've seen a lot of that, and I don't like that. Mm. You know, I'm not big on death.
The point of that story is, you know, this is happening all around the same time. Did any of that go through your mind when that field was bearing down on you, considering it's all recent history?
No. No, and in fact, I was in the hospital for like maybe 10 days. I can't remember. But Beach Ridge... the actor had a race at Beach Ridge, like 50 laps. I don't even know if it was that many, but 20 laps. And all the previous winners in the actor.
It's one of the best races I've ever seen in my life.
Plus, the champion from Beach Ridge was able to race in that. Well, I got out of the hospital because my doctor, you ain't no way getting back in a race car with the arm the way it is. Because my parents, everybody... I snuck out and saw Ralph. I said, "Ralph, I said, I'd like to race that race if I can. I said, I'll bandage this up. I'll sign a paper saying you're not, you know." He didn't make me do that. But I said, "I'll never, ever cause a problem if something happens. It's my fault." And I raced it. And Dave Dion, we come out of the four turn. Dave Dion somehow got over the lip. He got turned right around sideways. And that thing bit and come right up and drilled me right in the door on the passenger side, sent me over in the one turn dirt. They all calling me to see if I'm all right, which I was, but I couldn't answer them. I only got one hand. I'm trying to shift it. I'm trying to get it started. I just couldn't answer the thing, right? But everything turned out okay. It ended my day, but...
Yeah, that race was epic. And I think you can find it on YouTube somewhere. you know, so you meant from that, you win the championship, but there's a piece of history that goes along with that particular wreck that hurt your arm. Some safety equipment that came and modified after the fact.
They started putting a tin on the inside of the door bars, the roll bars.
So prior to your accident, they didn't have the tin.
No, we didn't have nothing. We had a piece of fiberglass.
Yeah.
Which that tin works fairly well. What happened was it cut right through half of an inch and a half tubing for my door bar. It went through that like a butter knife. Came right into my seat, took a chunk out of my seat. And I think, and I can't swear to this, I think that's when the fiberglass seats got canned right around the same time.
So just think of how many lives that you might have saved.
Well, I mean, it's like every accident. Them guys used to wear football helmets to race cars back in the generation before mine. Everything in racing, whether it's setup, safety, anything has all gotten better, and they learn from those accidents. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like when Dale Earnhardt flipped in Talladega, they come up with that bar that had to come down the middle of the windshield. I mean, every time something happens, and it's great that does happen, that they learn by it and they fix it.
Yeah, and you didn't have a catastrophic injury as a result of that.
But it could have been.
That safety measure.
Because it went into my ribs, you know, that pipe.
It could have killed you.
Yeah. If that pipe was 6 inches longer, I'd have been dead. Mm. You know what I mean? I was just lucky. And if it didn't rip that seat apart the way it did, the fiberglass seat, they probably wouldn't have even worried about the door bar protection. You know what I mean? It's kind of, but that's how everything has gotten better, by learning. Today, they're still learning. You know, they still make a lot of changes.
For the better.
Yeah. For the better, yeah.
Next time out, yes, there is a stage number 3. And this one, Mike, gets a little philosophical, looks back at his life, and, you know, and drops this nugget.
My whole life was trying to make my father proud of me. Even, you'd never believe it, some of the stuff I pulled. But, you know, that was my goal in life, was to make him proud of me. And I let him down a lot, but, you know what I mean? There was a lot of good times, too, you know.
So. Next time out, stage 3 of Mike Maietta on Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin, and thank you for the support.